Okie dokie, folks, and welcome to the Backbreaker Media Network. My name is Kyle Shaw, a.k.a. the Canadian Goose, and you are listening to Monday Night Shaw. On the show today, I have a BC wrestler named Danny Deeds. Danny, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. Always spreading the positivity.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that. How have things been?
Oh, you know, they're as well as they can be during a pandemic. We're antsy out here, just as sure as you are. You know, they started to do the unveiling for us now of different phases in hopes to perhaps get on track with shows again. So I'm excited in that there's, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, perhaps, in the next few months or so. So that's good.
Yeah, we are taping this on the 27th of May, just for those of you that are listening maybe in the future. And they just made a bunch of new announcements for out here in Alberta too. Like they're expecting to relaunch everything by the end of summer. So I'm happy about that. You know, as long as everything can be done safely, you know. Marky, one of the wrestlers out here, he actually just got done being in the hospital. He had COVID-19, and unfortunately, like, they had to put him in an induced coma. He was in the ICU, and my mom told me there was a story about it on the news and everything tonight. So, you know, it's nothing to mess around with. You got to be vigilant about safety and stuff these days, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I'm out there. I float all over the Fraser Valley doing a variety of different things with my own business. I've known people who've had COVID. I've known people who have family members who have passed away from it. It is very prevalent, of course, out here as well, too. We see the examples there. We know other wrestlers as well publicly who have had it. I'm glad that that this particular situation, that he's not in a coma anymore and the road to recovery is there. And thank God for that. And it is very real and in your face so much in a lot of the times, and it has been, but you know, things can be done safely as well. I had the pleasure of actually working, probably 3 or 4 matches worth in the fall of last year, just before they really started to nail down the travel restrictions. So there was a little bit of hope then. And I was able to see that, you know, you can do things safely and be respectful of people's health. But of course, yeah, but the safety is going to be a key thing out here for us when we start going again as well. I'm sure we can get into that as a topic as we get along, though.
Yeah, I mean that's probably even more so relevant to you because, like, not in addition to be a wrestler, correct me if I'm mistaken, but you're also the promoter out there of Pacific Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, that's also true. Yes, and we were one of the first casualties out here, unfortunately. We had a show scheduled called Reclamation, and we were having Simon Gotch flown in from the United States on Saturday the 14th, and they put the international travel restrictions into place on the 13th. And so we had to scramble to cancel Casey Spinelli being flown in, Gotch being flown in, a masterpiece of a show, and that hit us really hard. But then we opted, because our area down here is, I guess, the greater Vancouver general area, you know, down in the Fraser Valley, the lower mainland. Mm-hmm. There was enough prevalent cases that it wasn't even feasible for us to try to dip our toes into running 50 person events. They just went it, and so fortunately I was able to go out and work a few Big West wrestling shows out in Summerlin, and just be able to get some time in the ring again before we were really locked down. So I was grateful that at least I got to sneak that in.
That's solid. I know Marty Sugar runs the Big West Wrestling, and he's been on the podcast before too. And I got to meet him at a few shows out here in RCW. I really like him. He's a hoot.
Yeah, I've known Marty my entire career. My second match in was Marty Sugar, and went on my first tour with Marty Sugar. We've had a lot of opportunities to work together. Obviously, in ring, we haven't always seen eye to eye as competitors, but we've definitely had some classic battles as well. And we've done a lot of good business together professionally for our characters, as well as professionally working within our promotions and helping each other along the way. So I am very grateful to him as a friend and as a person for all the things that he's been able to help me accomplish. You know, not many people gave me the ball to run with it as much as Marty did. And I'm grateful for him letting me do that and being able to show what I could do, because it was able to elevate me at different points to things that I didn't even think I was capable of doing. So,
yeah. Solid. Well, I mean, yeah, it's always good when somebody gives you like a little bit of like that validation, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a tough market out there, you know, trying to, as a promoter and as a worker, sorry to rumble and to cut you off, who different promoters give the ball to at different times for different reasons, how things play out and how that can affect people's career. You know, I've been on both ends of that stick, right? Where people haven't seen anything in me or haven't given me an opportunity or intentionally tried to quash me. And I'm happy that, you know, you're able to defy those things when you know that you have a passion and a talent and you can rise above and do it. I hope that for everyone, you know, I hope that everyone gets that opportunity along the way at some point to be able to just feel that emotion and be given that at least opportunity one way or another, however it goes. Right.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, for sure. For sure. When did you start wrestling, brother?
I was 2007 is my first official match. I started training back in 2002, and then I dipped in and out of a variety of schools and finally hunkered down and did a full actual curriculum, which is exciting because they actually gave us an opportunity to present to the trainers what we wanted to get out of training. And I was very educational in my aspirations, and I was like, well, in addition to obviously learning all the things about wrestling, I wanted it to be very course like in its manner, so I was very grateful that we were given a very rigorous run through in 2007, and then December of that year is when I had my first singles match.
Oh, okay. Like, can you describe maybe let us know where you trained, and then B, can you give us like a little description of how it went down?
Sure. There's been a few different facilities. I'm going to refill my coffee as I go. That's how it works in this world. The first time around was with ECCW. Back then it was Extreme, or sometimes on flyers, I'm not sure if it was intentional, Extremely Canadian Championship Wrestling. eventually, they changed that over to Elite Canadian Championship Wrestling in its later years. But in 2002, they had a facility called the House of Pain out in Langley, BC. Michelle Starr, Vance Nevada, the Lumberjack Bubba, Johnny Canuck. They were training. They had two rings at one point running out of that facility out in Langley. They would run shows every Sunday featuring the students as they were training along and give them opportunities just to kind of get their feet wet. And that's where I first broke in. We ended up getting a flyer from... in listening to one of your podcasts recently, Beautiful Bruce, you know Bruce. Yeah, you know, Tiny Bruce, yep. Me Joe Bruce. He was handing out flyers at a WWE event or WWF back in the time. And we ended up getting one of those things, doing a tryout with ECCW because you could go do paid tryouts. And then eventually I hunkered down and tried to do some of that training in 02. And then I spent a handful of months there. I got hurt. I got beat up a bit. And then the school closed, and I went back and forth. I trained in one of the promoters' backyards for a bit. And then they opened up a new school, and I dabbled in a few different versions. But it was finally in Port Coquitlam when ECCW rebranded the Slam Academy. And it was under Nathan Burke, who worked at Cisco Fury out here, who was my primary trainer. And they used a curriculum that was put together by Vance Nevada a few years prior. And I think I was very well taken care of in the learning process. I'm very grateful for everything Nathan and his family did. And that era of 2007, 2008, as I kind of transitioned, I really felt a very family-esque environment come about ECCW at the time. And it was a very, for me, it was a great training experience for sure. And, yeah, very grateful I was able to learn as much as I did at that time, because because Lord knows sometimes training patches and stuff can really be detrimental in the long haul if you're not fully rounded, you know what I mean?
Yeah, wrestling training is definitely not like an easy thing to do, like, ever. It's been like kind of a different situation for me. Like, I never, like, you know, I didn't go to a specific school for a specific allotted amount of time and then graduate the program and then, you know, off to the races you go and go get booked. It was just like, I've just always consistently, like, just gone to training schools that are like around town and stuff. So, like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, as far as, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to dog on you or anything. I'm just saying, like, in my opinion,
there's many,
like,
different paths.
Yeah, like, I think that consistently practicing is always a good thing, you know?
Oh, 100%. I agree with you. There are many people that have come up, especially in the independent scene all throughout Canada and Western Canada here, that I know for a fact haven't done a normal 9-to-5 curriculum as far as what some people would privy as, like, a quote-unquote training situation. But I also don't underestimate any of their capabilities. You know, there's not a... I've worked people who are trained who have not been fully trained, people who have had their first matches, people who have never even considered having matches. In the end, if you have a passion for this business, you can help anybody learn and they can develop along the way. I'm one of those prime examples where people didn't necessarily believe in me because I was only 130 pounds when I started. Yeah. There was a company that wouldn't train me unless I was 180 pounds. And I was like, well, I could train, I could add the weight, I could learn all of the things, know psychology, get ready, and then be ready when I get there. And they said no. So another company trained me, and that was ECCW. And I'm grateful for that. But you're right, though. Like, the fact that you show up, you train ahead, you know, everyone takes their own path. And anybody can do this business if they work hard at it. And everyone's going to take a different path and working hard at it. If you do it in your own backyard because you have ring and you and another wrestler are utilizing that space and doing your own thing and you're under, you know, so many different ways, right? And we never know. I guess that's why we have these conversations that we can learn.
Yeah.
While we're on that topic then, sorry to cut you off, what has been your rounding? You mentioned that you've floated around and kind of learned. Who are some people that have taken you under their wing a little bit that you've really learned from on the Alberta scene?
When I first started, I trained in Andrew Hawks' backyard with Andrew Hawks and with Gunnar, the Pagan Destroyer. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's the fellow who fell out of the ring. Yeah, that was a fun. He's a fun dude. I really like him.
I had the pleasure of working him in Kelowna before.
Awesome. Yeah. I have never actually got to work him in a match, but we did do some training together. And then once that ended, there was like a time where I just kind of wrestled on like out of town, like smaller shows and stuff. And, you know, I was just kind of there to like put other guys over and stuff, which was totally fine. And honestly, like, I probably wasn't even ready for that. But at that point, Hawk had moved back to Newfoundland. And then I ended up one day just replying to a little thing and joined up with Force Wrestling and trained under Tex Gaines and Michael Richard Blaze. And then once the Force Wrestling facility ended up closing down, I joined up with Heavy Metal and Michael Richard Blaze at the Top Talent Wrestling Academy, and that's where I train still. Other than when it's closed due to pandemic lockdowns.
Awesome. Yeah, see, that's great. Like, knowing all that, like, that... Those reputations to me are trustworthy. You know, I see what Metal's done out there. I trust him. I've known Michael Blaze since like very early on, over 10 years. He was out here, one of his first little tours out here with the Alberta Boys. They ended up crashing at my house.
Oh, really?
You know, it was a regular thing to have the Alberta guys come out. And so it's great to see like the metamorphosis of that man and the talent. It's just, I'm so happy that he's been able to excel to the level that you could see right from the get-go that he had. It was just amazing. And Metal was one of the first people that I ever interacted with. Azeem the Dream introduced me to Metal on my first little stint out there and with OSCW.
Okay.
Hold on. I'm misdating. I was thinking of a different situation. That was with Azeem and I went there. Azeem initially introduced me to heavy metal, but I met heavy metal when my first stint in, when I came to Thorsby that time, in September of 2008.
Oh, wow. Have you wrestled in Alberta a lot?
Yeah, I wrestled there against William Saint in my first attempt. I did not win, but it was a good time. And the next night, it was hold on one second here. I wrote down the notes for you because I was researching my own discussion with you. So it was in September in 2008, and then I did a mixed tag in Athabasca. And I tagged with Domestic Partnership as a heel. And the bar absolutely hated Domestic Partnership. They hated me. And it was a great old time. And then in 2009, there was Old School Championship Wrestling for a brief little time period.
Okay.
OSCW. And then.
Was that run by Bernard?
Shane? Shane O'Ryan?
Oh, okay. Nope. Then I'm completely wrong. It's different.
And then Azeem the Dream and I had a one-on-one match there. But in the end, on my first little trip in general, like I recall Metal more so all wound up with Azeem the Dream. So I'm obviously dating myself in my own head, but nonetheless. I was in a historic appearance in Alberta, I'll have you know.
Oh, okay.
In 2010 for Old School Championship Wrestling, which because it was a newer promotion, everything was new to them, of course, right? So they had never had a female wrestler appear yet, and they had never had any mixed tags. And it was Casey Spinelli and Cannonball Kelly versus myself and Enid Urquhart. And so ta-da, and there you have it. So I was in the first mixed tag match for that particular company in Alberta. And so I'm sure other... It's like a one-off history, but you know.
Nice. Did you wrestle for RCW?
I wrestled for RCW, yeah, the first time around. Thorsby and Athabasca was for RCW. And then the other appearances were for OSCW. And then OSCW eventually folded. And I had talked a few years ago, I'm not sure if it was last year or the year before, about coming back. When I was on the gender neutral championship situation out here in British Columbia, which could be a whole other story. I was really petitioning hard to come out and fight the women's division for their championship out here in Alberta. But
oh, okay.
We were not successfully able to coordinate doing any of that. I guess that would have been 2020 was right. So 2019 was probably the attempt.
Right on. Well, I mean, it's a bummer that you guys weren't able to get anything actually done. But, you know, with everything sort of back here coming up on the rise again, hopefully you'll be able to turn that around and come out. I know that guys do come in from BC from time to time. Like we've brought Slave in a couple of times, and Jason the Terrible comes in. Marty's come in, you know. With the Voros guys come in a lot. Those guys are cool.
Yeah, I was hoping to maybe ride with them up there at some point. I used to be the driver. I had the Deeds Mobile. I had the pleasure of going up there. I had it was the Raines Brothers. I went up there with Kenny Lush and Billy Suede before. Yeah, the Bollywood Boys. There's been a lot of fun times just driving out there, and I really do enjoy Alberta. A lot of my family has actually left BC and lives in Alberta. Except for a few. So perhaps coming home and visiting. I've always wanted to do a lot more in Alberta because I only really had a taste in the first few years of my career. And then I really stayed focused out here. I became a father shortly after, like only 3 years into my career in 2010. I became a dad, and then it was like 2011 was when I started wrapping up traveling out of the province and staying more local and focusing on dadhood. But now my kids are grown up a little bit more right now, and I'm ambitious and I'm raring to go. So I'm hoping that there is Alberta in my future. And I've got a lot of angst to get out and a lot of character to put forth in the world. So we'll
yeah,
see.
That's definitely like one of the things that I've noticed about you. Like I don't know you like super well or anything, but I do like see your Facebook posts and stuff sometimes. And I love that your like character is like really colorful. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of like almost like I don't want to say like it's flamboyant. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm very, maybe even boisterous, as they say. But I definitely am in your face. I think I'm that way naturally sometimes, but it all really depends. I enjoy getting deep, but I could just as soon enjoy making people happy. It's had its pros and cons throughout my career. I've had some really good moments that are feel good for myself, and then I've had some moments where I've gotten some real legitimate heat for my antics in the ring, and you know, but you're right. I'd rather be a controversial figure that they can rely on one way or another to definitely entertain and give people their money's worth when it comes to doing what I do. So
yeah, that's kind of what's all about, you know. And like it's wrestling, right? So I think your character like should be like pretty like big and out there, you know, just in my humble opinion, you know, like I see sometimes there's like a lot of guys who is just like, okay, their first name and their last name and their gimmick is that they're a good wrestler. And it's like, if that's what you're going to be, like you got to be a really good wrestler to pull that off, you know?
Yeah. And you know, everyone, there are a lot of great wrestlers out there. Some of them have a personality and some of them don't. And sometimes that's going to be the difference. I've just learned to blend the both, I think, because I am this personality.
Yeah, it's definitely best like to have it is. Sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Yeah.
No. I was just saying, like I just like. Having a mix. Like you don't want the person to be the absolute, like, you know, awful and terrible in the ring, you know, but at the same time you don't want them to be like out there dazzling you with a bunch of big moves, but you don't really care, you know.
Yeah, and that's the best part of wrestling is you can have it all because there's so many of us and all of us are talented in so many ways, top to bottom. You can fill a card with an entire roster of people that are so different, even if they all sparkle the same. Very nice. That's the best part about wrestling. I love it.
Yeah, especially like independent wrestling. Like there's a lot of guys in WWE where it's like, okay, like there's a lot of similarities between a lot of people, you know, but like on the indies, it's like everybody is very distinct and clearly different from one another, you know?
Yeah, that could be true in a variety of ways. Sometimes I see that there's also sometimes a generational style of wrestling that you can also tell. I have the pleasure of being, in the ring with so many different types of styles, which is something I really enjoy the most about. I'd like to think of myself as somebody who could probably get a good match with anybody, because I really just like putting people over and making the audience happy and, you know, doing good business. But, some people like to work a pace, you know, and it's different. There's a new age pace. There's a strong style pace. There's a faster pace. And then some people know when to slow it down. And so it is different sometimes because I feel that there's a newer age pressure to go at a different speed sometimes. And, I don't know, yeah. I'll keep with it. I go with it. I go with whatever my opponent needs out of me and whatever the crowd needs from me. But in the end, it's very interesting that as we've gone over the years, because when I was coming in, I could see, like, you know, I was watching the indies in BC at the tail end of the 90s, going into the early 2000s, and then I transitioned into myself. And now we went through the 2010s and now into the 2020s and where we were starting to head. pre-COVID. And it's just, it's very interesting to be able to watch different generations. And of course, you know, being a fan since we were, you know, since I was young age, so you watch, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s, whatever it is that you're into, right? So,
yeah.
Psychology at four.
100%, man. Did you start off as a wrestler, or did you do any, were you like a ringside manager or a commentator or an announcer or anything like that before you actually donned the tights and started working matches?
I did it in reverse. All those things you listed, I've done since then. Beforehand, though, it was always the do stuff, setting up, tearing down. I'm great with venues. The first one in and the last one out as far as cleanup goes sometimes. Like there was some nights everyone's gone off to the gimmick. And of course, you know, they're going to be the few stragglers, but I'd be there till the bitter end trying to clean up those venues and make sure that we got some things. You know, there's there's good bodies that way, but you got to pay your dues, right?
Yeah.
So beforehand, it was just watching. One of my favorite positions, you know, is the ringside security, of course, but being a ringside photographer in place of somebody who wasn't there was a lot of fun because I got to watch the matches while I'm training on the side, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I get to watch this, like from 2 feet away, I'm snapping all these action shots, but I don't have to do security. I don't have to count the three. I can just watch as a fan. So that was a lot of fun. But it wasn't until afterwards though. I really do like commentating. I am going to be starting my own podcast in the next few months as well. I'm working on a book. I'm doing a variety of different projects now to kind of fill the gaps until the next phase of whatever is going to happen in my life.
Yeah, right on. I mean, didn't you run for mayor a little while ago?
I did. In 2018, I ran for mayor out in Abbotsford here. I've been here since about 30 years now. I've been here. So I just felt that there were some things that happened in the city that weren't necessarily to my liking. And I wanted to stand up and be a voice. As you know, I am, as we touched on, I am a little bit loud. And so, but I felt that was needed in the shakeup of things in our local community. And so I had the opportunity to have a voice for a little while. Some people, it was a fun little run. I came in fourth of six, so that's not too bad. And I was going to run in a recent by-election for council that they just announced. I put my name forth, and then we are still here now. They announced a by-election in February. We still don't have an announcement of the date here.
Oh, geez.
and like literally it's been, I think almost a few months to the day now. February 27th was when the other counselor stepped down. So, so then I decided to just focus on my family more and, put together some other projects in my life that were more important at the time. There were some other candidates running, anyways, and I know that they would have the best interest of the community. Plus, there's a regular election next year already. So I may or may not run again. But the purpose behind why I ran was good, and appreciated the support the community gave me for doing it. So,
do you think your involvement in like actual politics has helped you navigate the pro wrestling politics whatsoever, or vice versa?
Vice versa. I think that wrestling and my ability to, I think, do good business and stay afloat politically in very tumultuous times and very unique times, and even stay somewhat quasi-relevant after, you know, 14 years, I think that has attributed being able to put that over to politics and be like, okay, well, things need to be said. Like, a lot of my stuff was just cutting live promos, because that's what wrestlers do. We cut live promos. But I would talk to, like, I would go down and I would physically be standing by tons of heaps of needles or garbage or whatever the case is, and use physical examples of stuff that I was upset about in the city. And I would just talk about it like it was a wrestling program, but I was being honest about what was happening. And so, I think that our ability to, you know, be almost a character while also mixing our true emotions, because that's what wrestling is. I mean, we have all our feelings, There's a lot of truth to the things we say in promos, and the idea was that I, you know, the kind of promos on each of these topics. And if I hadn't necessarily learned to disconnect emotion and be able to do what we do in wrestling, because you have to be very thick-skinned in wrestling just to survive the initial business, let alone to survive over a decade of it, and then voluntarily be like, hey, I want to plunge into actually promoting as well. That might as well just be a you got to be a special kind of crazy to do that.
So. Yeah, no, I was going to go with there with you next, because like I have done refereeing, announcing, you know, I've been a sound guy. I've been a wrestler now. I've done like, you know, videotaping matches from ringside, like you say. I've done a little bit of commentary, but the one thing like I've never done is promoting, and I don't think it's something I'd be really interested in doing because it seems like a nightmare.
It is, and I can only imagine that post-pandemic it's going to be a little bit more difficult. I mean, it can be very cut and dry, but there was a lot of other factors to consider, especially out here on the West Coast. There's so many different happenings that were going on, and there was over 10 promotions that are running in this province. Even though they don't always get talked about and put in a focal point, we try to share those. I'd be happy to list those off for you later on for any of the listeners, just so they can go research on their own what's out there. Sure. Because there's going to be a lot of different landscapes. I know myself as a promoter, I already have my eyes on some Alberta talent. I was already in talks with hopefully bringing some out. And so I'm looking to also start scouting talent as well too. But
nice. Do you want to mention any names?
I'm going to make you wait and see. I don't want to give any spoilers, but you will know them, and they will be familiar names to you. And as a hint, perhaps even some of them have come up in this conversation. But I won't delve on that because I like little teasers. But I have been eyeing doing that for a while. The big idea behind promoting out here was, though, even though they have all of these different promotions that are running, both creatively as well as in way they utilize talent cross promotionally, was not as much as it really could be. There was a lot of politics out here, as there always are in every province, every territory, or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. There is some kind of thing. And even though all of the promoters could probably do good business together and we do interact with one another, there, you know, we all are running our own companies. We all have our own visions of things and who we do and don't want to push. And there was a lot of names that weren't working each other specifically because you wouldn't book one promotion over another. You wouldn't cross promote. Certain things just weren't happening because that's how things are, unfortunately, right?
Yeah, I mean, and, out here, it's very much like if you're an RCW, you're an RCW guy. And if you're a PWA guy, then you're a PWA guy. And, you know, within the city limits of Edmonton and Calgary, you don't cross-pollinate, you know? I mean, if there's a show in Red Deer, it's pretty much anything goes. Anyone can wrestle on that show. But in Calgary and Edmonton, it's very much like everybody has to stick to their own promotion, and it's kind of like an unwritten rule. Like there's no, like, I don't think there's any like hard and fast like thing other than, you know, if you go work for them, I'm not going to book you anymore type stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's and we've had situations where it was that and also where it wasn't that. I've been debooked because I did a run-in on a company's show that was run at the same venue that another company would run, even though they knew that the venue was going to happen. And then I still ended up working for the promotion later. And it just, yeah, I could see that. But the idea for me was that as a worker, I don't like that. Yeah. Like I respect it and understand it territorially, especially probably more so in Alberta, because I feel that to a certain degree, there's areas of Alberta that are more sacred and associated with wrestling than perhaps so with the mainland at this day and age. And so, you know, maybe drawing those lines of Calgary, Edmonton, you know, that we out here, there are unspoken lines. Like I probably aren't going to run. I'm not going to run westward of Abbotsford because typically there's already 2 to 5 companies that are trying to run in the greater Vancouver or Vancouver Island area. So I don't need to go into that saturated market. I picked Abbotsford because there's 140,000 people here. There seems to be a liking for wrestling, especially when a Niagara Fair crowd draws 300, 400, 500 people. So we wanted to give them a product that was blending things that they wouldn't see at any other promotion. Taking a wrestler from ECCW and a wrestler from All-Star and a wrestler from Big West and a wrestler from Thrash and a wrestler from Vancouver Island and a wrestler from 365 or Lucha or wherever else, and we would mix them all together, have a cross-promotional matches, including cross-promotional title matches. We had an international championship match with Scarlett Black, who was the Thrash Wrestling Okanagan Interior Champion. She beat Madison Miles to win her DOA UK Women's Championship in Abbotsford, and then the next night Maddie picked it up in a three-way at an All-Star Wrestling event before heading back on the road again.
Nice.
And it's and so there's a lot of things, but nobody, there wasn't a general idea behind a lot of the bigger promotions that have been running out here to do those kinds of things, because they wouldn't pick column A from column B, and they wouldn't cross-pollinate. But I think cross-pollination as a worker brings out something that's different. And as a worker, I would want to work different people all the time. You know, I would, you know, and I don't want to, and you know, I would love to come to Alberta, but what if I could bring Alberta here and I could work them? You know, like there's so many different, or I could pick someone versus someone. You know who I would love to see in a singles match?
Who's that?
If I may say so, would be Travis Williams. Who out here? Are you familiar with Travis Williams?
I think I've heard of him for sure, but I'm not. I'm not super familiar with him.
That's okay. Travis Williams versus Michael Blake. It's been like a dream match of mine. I think that right now, especially in their prime, we got a guy out here, Judith Icarus. I would love to see mix it up. It's just there's a lot of people.
Yeah,
but the thing is, with us is we put together shows, but we aren't training and developing workers ourselves. We're putting together shows, and we're extending those hands and trying to cross-pollinate intentionally for the workers and for the fans, so we can guarantee that even in this local saturated area of an hour to 2 hour drive from us, they can see something that they're not going to see on another show. And of course that's the goal of every show. You know, the other guy's not doing what we're doing either. We try to work together that way. We don't want to, you know,
yeah.
We also don't want to tread on their toes, but you know, we try to do good business to put everybody over. Our goal, like, that's why I don't mind mentioning who's who and putting over. We do bios that write up people's history and what they are, and they're the champion of this company and they're doing this right now, because it's all about the independent worker and what they're doing, but it's also about pushing the industry as a whole, all of the promotions in general. And that sucks, because I would love to come work RCW. I've never worked in Calgary. I've always wanted to work in the greater Calgary area, but I've also wanted to work more in direct Edmonton. But if RCW and PWA, and I can't work for both of them, it sucks that I would have to choose if ever I was even given the opportunity, for starters. But you know, like, but I can respect what it is. It's just, you know, but out here we're trying to break that barrier.
Yeah, I think like with you being an outsider, you might be able to get away with it. Like depending, as long as the show is not on like the same night or something. But I mean, I definitely am not in a position of any kind of authority that can 100% you on that. Yeah. But the one unique promotion in Alberta to call it even a promotion is kind of probably not an accurate description, is the Clandestine Society. Which was kind of MRB's baby, right? And it was sort of like a show by the boys for the boys. And we ended up having people from every federation on the show in Edmonton for the first one. But we didn't charge any money for the tickets. So like that's how they kind of got around it. And I mean, I really loved being on that show, because I got to be in the ring with a bunch of like new people. And, you know, it was definitely a big milestone show for me, for sure. And then, like you say, like you got to see MRB and BVD in a triple threat match against Artemis Spencer. And it, like, to this day is like one of the sickest matches I've ever seen like live.
Yeah. And so you can imagine, you start blending those promotions and those people and those cross boundaries. So I'm looking forward to that portion when we get there, because I do want Alberta to come westward. Even if I can't get there and work myself, I'd love to hire people from Alberta. You could send resumes and information in bio. I know some guys have shot them over. PPWCanada604@gmail.com.
Okay.
Is the email address for our business if you're wanting to forward. I believe in initiative. I believe in showing the things. I like seeing a wrestling resume and doing the class. Reach out to a promoter. Tell me who you are, what you're doing. You can shoot me a hey, what's up on Facebook, but it's not as personal as you taking the business initiative to say, hey, this is my craft. I'm taking this seriously. This is why I want to work for you. That kind of thing. But I'm a businessman also. I think that's a great blend, is that I'm a businessman, but I also get to be a wrestler. So it's been beneficial to be able to blend both those skills when it comes to running a promotion as well. It is an uphill battle, but I see a challenge with a lot of different wrestling promoters who don't necessarily understand the business world in conjunction with the wrestling aspect of it, because mm-hmm. they're two different things, but they have to meld together and you need a team. I don't run PPW Canada just solo. There's a group of us that put in effort, put in ideas, put forth decisions, because you would go absolutely crazy. You know, much like there's volunteers and you're all helping out there. You're putting over the Alberta wrestling scene as is on your own. Like, you do it in so many different facets, between your podcast, between your video, between the content that you put, and then the character that you also portray on all the shows. So good on you for that out there.
Yeah,
was a draw to why I was interested in having a conversation with you as well, because you, in my opinion, you've definitely come a long way from not many people going to give you a shot as an underdog, or as it would appear on media, in the long time we've known one another during the briefing. But then to now, you know, defying those naysayers and being somebody who is a go-to person for a conversation in Alberta.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. And you can definitely, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still sort of in the phase where I'm still learning a lot. But I will shoot you over a resume for sure, because I would love to come and wrestle in BC.
BC is going to be booming, and everything's going to be booming again soon. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. What do you find is the most challenging aspect of being a promoter?
I think, well, we got to be put on hold, so that was fine. I honestly, if I can just speak plainly, because it'll be a topic, I think how to deal with the ramifications and falling out of the speaking out movement, and how it will affect locker rooms and morale on the BC wrestling scene. Yeah. Is going to be the toughest task for us. Because speaking out, unfortunately, speaking out was needed. It was important that certain things were said and brought forth, and it changed the scene out here in BC for us. However, it also gave us all a clean slate to kind of move forward. Whether or not, though, the boys and girls of divided locker rooms out here, how they're going to feel. Like, it went from people voicing their thoughts and opinions and coming forth with these stories to changing its tone to bullying, to harassment, to, oh, I didn't like this joke 5 years ago. Oh, I didn't like this from six, you know what I mean? And then it became a pointing game. Yeah. And now I, as a promoter, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, who do I put in my locker room? Like, we haven't run a show now since February 2020, right? So we have no characters, no storyline that are definitely set in stone. Even our championship is up in limbo, because the guy won it at a tournament, and then I beamed him in the head with the belt because that's just how it played out, and I'm a dick. And then he wasn't at the show the next time around to give him the belt, and then we canceled. So now we haven't even presented our first championship belt yet. But who do you put in the locker room with who? I don't want to have to babysit the world. Everybody's grown adults. But what I really saw during the speaking out movement is there's a lot of hurt still in people's hearts from a variety of things that have happened to them over the years. And I'm sure that you've been a victim. I've been a bully in a locker room. I've seen bullying in a locker room. I've seen harassment in a locker room, seen inappropriate behavior in a locker room or in front of fans or in a ring. I've heard and said things in a ring to people outside the ring that you shouldn't. I've made babies cry. I have, you know, we've done the things, and what is right and what is wrong, and everyone's different version of that is different. And now trying to muddle all of these different people. And down here in the Lower Mainland, there's, you know, and not only the Lower Mainland, but the Pacific Northwest, because Northwest Washington, Oregon, Cali isn't too far for us to drive people up from as well, too. So when you mix that in, you got 60 to 100 plus workers in that general range, who wants to work with who doesn't want to work with who's been addicted to. Like, it's so much to try to have to sort out now. And I feel like if we don't address it, then that's not good. But by addressing it, we almost have to have like an HR vetting process. And that's the only thing that's really weighing on me. I just want to book guys based on their talent. Guys and girls, of course. I want to book talent based on their talent. I want to bring people in to put in dream matches. But I'm also cut off that way where I don't know everyone's opinion of everybody else. And I don't know who's wrong and who's right and this, that, and the other. So maybe I'll end up putting someone in my locker room and I don't know, and he was some guy who assaulted some guy 5 years ago, and I was unaware of it because how would I know? Yeah. And then all of a sudden I don't have a promotion because I get slandered for making the wrong decision. That's the pressure of this next round. It's not who to put in the ring. I have a fantasy booking card for, of course, matches and matches of all these shows. We had a whole year that I envisioned for all of these different people to come in and out just so we could see different talent filtered throughout Abbotsford. I still have those dreams, and I'm still hoping those picks are the right people. But I feel like that pressure's on, and I don't want to let our roster down. I don't want to let our fans down, and I want to give them that good quality product. And I want the boys and girls to be able to come into our locker room safely and know that we're taking care of them and that we're all here for the right reasons. And I don't know. That's probably the anxiety, if I were to sum it up in about a minute and 2 minute rant, whatever that was.
You know, I think we've been fortunate here in Alberta that there hasn't been any like stuff like that that's been publicized. I think Ted Hart came under a little fire or whatnot, but I don't, you know, we don't really need to get into the specifics of it or anything. I think that, like, just from my point of view, like, I'm just here to entertain people with my buddies. So, like, I just try to get along with everybody. But, you know, like you said, there is, you know, yeah, I have seen some things that were, like, you know, nothing where I'd be like, oh, this person's a criminal and should be in jail. But, you know, things where it's like, oh, that's kind of inappropriate or not cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are you going to do, yeah, right? Like, it just kind of...
Well, that's the question, though. Like, we don't want to... That can't be discredited either. Like, and that's I think that's the harder part, too, is, like, I can say that I don't want to parent those things, but I have to because I care enough about people in the locker room.
Yeah.
I don't want somebody to feel uncomfortable because they're with so-and-so, but I don't know. And it's just like, ugh, and it sucks. And seeing so many heartbreaking things brought forth with that was very disheartening on a lot of people that I know. And so but you're right. I just want to entertain and have fun and create an environment where we can do that.
Yeah. You know, so let's go to the complete vice versa of that question then. What is your favorite part about not only being a promoter, but also just being a wrestler?
The people.
Yeah.
100% the people. I love to make people happy. And I really pride myself on working hard to just give anybody anything I can and give them what they need or want. I get to do that in every capacity as a wrestler. You know, whatever facet, if I have to go out there and make that baby cry, maybe I will. And if I have to go out there and make that kid cry tears of joy, then I'll do that too. It's all about creating emotion, and I love connecting with human beings. And this is there's no other thrill. The pop when you come through a curtain, getting to do the things that you saw as a kid that you wanted to do. Like, I was voted in the top three most likely to end up in WWE in our grad year, because myself and some others had such an affinity for wrestling in general, even though it was uncool to be a wrestling fan in those times. And to be able to do that is just, yeah, I connect every high five, every boo, everything, because if you're getting emotion from people, you are getting emotion from people, mm-hmm. one way or another. And it's true emotion. You know, they either genuinely want to be behind you while you're in there just giving your all, or they don't. And no matter how the show is kind of, you know, drafted or put forth into the world, you know, the magic you make in the ring is between you and those people that you're working with in the ring and everybody else in there. And that's,
I think that else. That's a great description of it too, like magic. Like,
yeah,
100%. Like, I definitely, like, there's definitely been times where I'm just like, you know, I'm smiling ear to ear on my face, you know, unless I'm actually like selling, but then I'm, you know, in my head, I'm smiling ear to ear just because like things are going the way we want them to type thing,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. We did a show for RCW in Calgary a little while ago, and The Godfather was on the show. So there was like a packed crowd, like 400 people or something in the Legion. It was awesome. And I was part of an undercard match. It was like a 5-way, and I hit a dude with a headbutt and the whole place went nuts. Like just everybody just started honking. And I was like, oh, this is like the greatest feeling I think I've ever felt, you know?
Yeah. Those cards are hot. You know, Godfather's a nice guy. I met him when he came down for a Kelowna Invasion and an ECCW double shot. I ended up getting to spend a couple hours on the road with him. And that was fun, driving just between the Vancouver area up to Kelowna. There's a few hours from here. So him and Val Venus were on the same shot. But great
oh, wow.
guy. But yeah, you're right. But when they draw those crowds, right, and you got 400, 500, 600 people, as opposed to perhaps, you know, 80 to 100 or 20 to 30,
yeah.
You know, they're, you know, going into the pandemic, I remember last year, you know, we were only allowed 30 people plus staffing. So it was, you know, so I can imagine that feeling, the rush of the crowd. They're just into every single moment and they're just soaking it up. And yeah, good for you. Good for you for taking that in.
It was a great time. We got to actually, like, the next night we had a show in Edmonton too. And I'm so happy because I was just going to go home after the show, but Heavy Metal like really highly encouraged me to come out to the after party. And so I went over to the after party, which was at a local gentleman's club here, which is, you know, not the kind of establishment I would normally frequent. But just like sitting there in the VIP section of the strip club with the Godfather as he just held court and told a bunch of stories to guys, I was like, I am so happy that I came and attended this after party because it was awesome. Who are some other big name guys that you have been able to do business with or meet during your time as a wrestler that you have any fond stories of?
I was able to have a couple of interactions with Jimmy Hart, one of which he managed me at the Agra Fair.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And he popped by the pub I was running at the time as well, had a bit of lunch, and it was nice just to be able to see him a couple times over in general. Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase also came out here for an Agra Fair showing as well, and I got to have a private dinner with him and a few others. So that was one of my favorite stories about that at the end is the waiter brought the bill and he was going to give Ted his bill. And then Mike's like, no, I'll take that. And I'm like, why are you taking his and not mine? And then Ted leaves it. He's like, because I'm the Million Dollar Man and you're not. Then he starts cackling at me. It was a pretty wonderful moment to have that too.
I haven't had the fortune of meeting him, but I did meet Virgil.
Yeah. Oh, you did meet Virgil. All right. That's good.
Yeah. He was a hoot. Really, really like a great. Told me that he his finishing move back in the WWE days used to be he would get a guy down on the ground and break their femur. And I was like, I'm not sure that story is true, Virgil, because I think I would have heard about that. But no, he was great. He was fantastic. But go ahead, continue.
And then,
sorry.
Yeah, so I've had those, and then I've had interactions just with people in general. Mick Foley, I had a wonderful story with because he was out here for a little bit. And he did a Kelowna invasion set as well, where they did Vernon and Kelowna. And there was a time recent, it was back in 98, when he came out to a signing at Virgin Radio in Vancouver. And we had waited all day. We were the last people before the line got cut off for these autographs. And I went through, I got all these autographs, and I had waited. I wanted Mick Foley's autograph. And I got pushed along because I said the word ass. I would like yell, I'm like, you can't ask. And then he was like doing some kind of half interview, where we kind of half signing artists. So they bumped me along and never got his autograph. So fast forward to a few years ago where he's at the show. And so I finally got to tell him that story. He gave me a personalized autograph. We did photos together, and it was a fun interaction while he was out here. It was a great time. And I got to see him actually when he did stand up comedy later on in New West. I got to go backstage with them and hang out with them for a little while too. So that was nice. And, but I, interestingly enough, other than a match with Rikishi, which I wasn't intended to be in, and I was on his side in a six man, I've never competed against a name or somebody you would call a name from who's from a higher up promotion or, you know, however that may be. I've worked alongside them and I've worked with them and I've worked on cards around them, but I've never competed against anybody. As far as the name is concerned, though, so, yeah. There's a lot more other stories along the way of different people that have come and gone from cards and things like that. But those are some of the more memorable ones. But yeah, Rikishi ended up being for my own promotion. The other main eventer wasn't. He's a train conductor. He couldn't make the show last minute because that's how it works. And so, but it was in our hometown, and it was an easy fit to just kind of slot me in there. But my intent was never to do that. I'm really appreciative to all those guys, and especially Rikishi, for just putting together such a wonderful night and a wonderful match for the people of Abbotsford that night. So great guy to work with as well. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I'm very, like I say, I'm much newer than you are, but I haven't had the opportunity to like share the ring with any name guys, but I have introduced a bunch of them just as the ring announcer and stuff. So like I always consider myself fortunate whenever I get to meet anyone that I used to watch on TV. I think it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. I think it's a humbling experience. And then I also found it almost a personal victory to know that I am at a level where I could just even be sitting in a ring that like sitting in a room on a card with these people that I admired from afar. Like if, for me in Abbotsford, I remember having a big blow up of a story in Abbotsford about a match. One day I'll get more into that match details, but it was the first time I had ever been on a show with Gangrel. And he happened to be headlining, in one of the feature matches that night, in Abbotsford. I was always excited. I was a huge Brood fan when I was younger. But of course I had this huge emotional outburst about my match and a variety of political things that went down in that moment. And I wasn't in the wrong, but I felt that being like me blowing up about it, especially in front of a professional like Gangrel, was not professional. And I definitely felt bad about it that he had to just watch that situation unfold, in a relatively undisturbed locker room other than that night. So,
yeah. I don't really know you personally or anything. But I definitely have not heard that you have a reputation for being like unprofessional or anything like that. So,
no, it was just I blew up. You wanted the backstory. There was a backstory. I was frustrated. I was in the hot open against a guy who I knew he had hurt his knee the night before. We decided we're not going to work the knee. And there was another worker who definitely had a vendetta against me personally before we even broke into the business, but had also happened to be in the business at that time. And during this hot open match, we're all guns a-blazing, the action spills out onto the floor, and this other worker convinced the promoter that the guy I was working was legitimately hurt. So he just ran out right in the middle of the hot open in my hometown, the opening match, and he just clustered it and DDT finished it, only to walk backstage, and the guy's like, I'm not hurt at all. What are you doing? You know, and then it was just to fuck me over. And Oh, and it was embarrassing. Anyway, and I had a right to be upset about the situation. So I wasn't unprofessional. I was just obviously vocal and upset would be the best way. I don't tend to blow up about things, but that night I was definitely hot because there was no need except for just him being a dick.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good idea. Like, just from
and
that.
And he's out of all of this business, so it doesn't really matter anymore. And it, but the,
oh, did you say he's not in the business anymore?
No, not at all. No, oh, for many okay. a year now. So that's so it's like, not even relevant to name drop. So it's you, all
like,
good.
I mean, just like from my perspective, and like I say, you know, who the fuck am I? But you know, if some dude just randomly, like, even if it is another wrestler, start like hits the ring, and you don't know what the fuck is going on, like that's a seems like a pretty good way to get your ass kicked, you know? Like,
yeah, later on it actually ended up becoming a skirmish because it, in an attempt to fix the situation, we were supposed to come out and do a run in later, which, and the story gets more interesting. We might as well.
Sure, let's just
pop the people and pop the boys while we're doing it. So later on, it's presented, okay, well, what we're going to do then, we're going to fix this situation because I was hot and I wanted to go back out and have another match, but it doesn't work that way in wrestling, you know?
No.
It's over. I can't go back and have a redo. It doesn't work that way. So what are we going to do? We're going to come back in a few months, of course, and we're going to have a different style of match. We're going to set up a steel cage match. Here's how we're going to do it. So later on, I think it was Michelle Starr was in the ring, and he's about to get flopped by this group of people, including this guy, he who shall not be named. And
Chris Benoit. Told- no, I'm just kidding.
I don't mind saying Chris Benoit's name. I know it's a taboo name because of how the situation ended. But I was a great Chris Benoit fan. His ability in the ring was amazing. It's the same way. It's kind of like, you know, you can't like Bill Cosby now because of everything that went down. But when you were a kid, you liked him as a comedian until you found everything out.
Yeah, right? 100%. I completely agree.
So it sucks. It's like, oh, shit. You know, but, you know, that's the way, you know, that's how it is, right? You gotta. But anyways, off topic. So the spot, as we know, we hate that fucking word. We're going to hit the ring as we do these, you know, these happy-go-lucky good boys from local are going to hit that ring and the bad guys are going to run out of that ring.
Okay.
Well, we hit the ring and nobody got out of the ring. Pardon my French. I'm like one of the last to get in the ring. Another guy slides in and from behind, he hits the guy who shall not be named from behind with a forearm in the shoulders. And eventually we all just, it turns into this melee and everyone spills out of the ring. And then I all of a sudden get pulled out of the ring by this guy who is apparently attempting to shoot on me in some fashion, but I didn't really know what was going on. He's just like attempting to club and he's needing to be ripped apart from me. And I don't really know what's happening because none of this is supposed to be happening.
Okay.
And then we get backstage and he's frustrated because in the match, he hurt his kidney. And the person who came into the ring, who was apparently me, ran into the ring and punched him in the kidney. And I was baffled. And so he had pulled me out of the ring to try to give me a receipt for punching him in the kidney when I wasn't even in the ring. Nor did he get hit in the kidney, nor could he have convinced any of us that he was injured in his apparent kidney. And it was just an implosion, and I lost my mind. And then the promoter decided not to run that match or even come back to Abbotsford at all until later on. And when they did come back to Abbotsford, they faved me on a booking, even though I live here.
It sounds like you might have dodged a bullet, to be honest with you, bud. Like, that's like everything you just described there sounds like horseshit to me. Like, it's a buddy hits the ring in the middle of the first match without letting either of the boys know that that's a possibility, you know. And then later on, everybody starts pulling each other out of the ring and shooting on each other, which is all like, I've seen a match break down into a shoot, like a one-on-one match happen in Springbrook that just like turned into a shoot fight. And it was the most awkward, unentertaining nonsense I've ever seen in a wrestling show. Like,
yeah,
I was on sound that night and one of the guys just started beating the trash out of the other guy because they had some sort of personal issue going on. And eventually the referee just left and ran away. And because I was on the music, I just like, I hit the guy that was doing all the beatdown. I hit his music and they proceeded to leave the ring and went, you know, back and continued fighting in the locker room. But it's like, just, it's not entertaining to watch. This is not what the people came to see. You know, nobody wants to see anyone laying on the ground, like awkwardly holding somebody else. Like, is, you know, it's not fun. It's not what it's about. Well, it's not professional either, which is, you know, like this is professional wrestling. And if you're going to pull some real nonsense like that, well, you know, you probably don't want to, like, it's probably best if you're not working for somebody that's letting that sort of thing go on a show. No, like, and I'm not trying to bury myself. I don't want heat with anyone. But it just like
it's long done, and even then, like later on, we've done business again because that's the wrestling business, mm-hmm. And business is always business, even if I have personal feelings, right? Because like, at the end of the day, we are individual entrepreneurs trying to get ourselves over and do business, right?
So
it is what it was. The fans wouldn't have known any better, but it's an interesting story. For all those now, that's all I got as far as the juicy gossip. Or maybe I have more.
Well, that's okay. I don't like to make my podcast really about like a bunch of like salacious like stuff either. There's been a couple of guys that have come on here and sort of shot on other people, and sometimes I'm very iffy about whether I even want to air that sort of thing. But you know,
I don't. Like,
it's just because like I don't want heat rubbing off on me, you know, and like I say, I'm trying to get along with everybody because I'm just sort of here to entertain people with my friends.
Yeah, I get that. And that's a hard point. And that's why I try my best, especially when I'm being interviewed and stuff. I don't need to name drop. I need to bury people. I don't need to put people down. If anything, if I'm name dropping, it's because I want to build people up, either a company or a person in this business or memories I've had. I don't like the dog eat dog world of it. I just love watching the success of it and people get excited about it. And that's why I'm also into promoting. You know, I'm like, I'm going to be 40 this year, not to overly age myself. And I'm still going strong. I'm in great physical health. I hope that I have another run in me and that'll be great. But I'm transitioning and promoting so I can give other people different opportunities. Other than being thrown into that Rikishi match, the idea behind running Pacific Pro Wrestling was for me to never be an in-ring competitor for my own company. I only did it by proxy because it made sense at that time, but it doesn't make sense for me. I can go on the road and I can be Danny Deeds where I need to be, but I really look forward to giving opportunities to other people and watching them all first and watch the next generation succeed at doing something. And I think that I'm hoping that we'll find a lot more of that from other workers that, you know, the fact that there is a top talent academy now, the fact that there's an education that's being passed along to the next generation of Albertan wrestlers in that particular area, those kinds of things, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's I'm happy to see that there's so much going on around here. Like, you know, we've got top talent wrestling here in Edmonton. Also, Monster Pro Wrestling has a training facility. And then down in Calgary, they have the Alberta Wrestling Academy. And, you know, there's, you know, been some controversy lately around the Workhorse Fitness Center. But, I mean, I have trained there, and it was like a top-notch facility. Say what you might about, you know, some of the people involved. But it's a good time. Like it's a good time to be a wrestler because there's a lot of places that you can learn, you know? Like, it used to be out here in Alberta, the only place you could go to do wrestling school was Lance Storm's training academy. And, you know, I feel like the disadvantage to something like Lance's was that it is like a three-month program, then you're done, right? So...
Yeah. Yeah. And as a wrestler, of course, you can never stop learning. So,
I mean, yeah, just like 3 months of knowledge. I just don't think it's enough to, you know, to have learned enough to be successful. But like, again, I didn't go there, so I don't know how it goes. And most of the people that I have been in the ring with who have come from there are all fantastic. So,
yeah, I've had the pleasure of working a few people out here in the Okanagan area. I believe Sean Gaston, Braden Goss, Dave Darcy. Those guys were trained as far out in the Storm area as well. Yeah. And, but yeah, you know, but some people I've seen too, though, like some people come in and 2 or 3 months they're ready to go. And other people, it takes a bit longer, and other people take different paths as we talked about earlier. And, you know, in the end, we all do it for different reasons. And if we get there, then we all just, we're there for our own reasons, right?
Yeah. And I think that there's different levels of getting there too. Like, I think that getting there can be defined in so many different ways for different people, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, we have exceeded the hour that I told you this should take. So let's get around to your social media plugs and whatnot, and let the people know where they can get a hold of you. If you got the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, I don't know any other peripheral social media platforms that I might be unaware of. Why don't you let us know where we can find out more about Danny Deeds and Pacific Pro Wrestling?
All righty. So at Danny Deeds, Danny's with an I, so D-A-N-N-I Deeds, at Danny Deeds on Twitter, on Instagram at Danny Deeds, on Facebook, it's at that guy, Danny Deeds. But if you look up Danny Deeds with an I, I'm sure you'll find the page. Pacific Pro Wrestling is at PPW Canada on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. And we will be launching a ppwcanada.ca and .com later on in the year. And we also have a YouTube channel for myself. PPW will have one up and running shortly, but it's a very elongated link. So perhaps I can send that to you, or people can just, I'm sure if you look on YouTube under Danny Deeds, you can Google a variety of different matches that I haven't posted, but on my own page, I do a lot of rants. I like doing parody wrestling songs. Weird Al was a big influence. So I do a lot of parodies that are theme songs. I recently did That Guy's Stunner Anthem and covered Eminem. I've covered Cher. I've bounced all over the place. But That Guy's Stunner Anthem was the first music video we dropped. And I also recently did a parody of Lap as Big Ass Stunners. Usually it's prevalent to whatever show that I'm on, but I like to mix up wrestling content locally and as a pet project. So find me on YouTube.
That's fantastic, buddy. I am a huge fan of all the creativity. There is a song on YouTube called "Ode to Gene Snitsky" that is a rap song I made all about Gene Snitsky. I did it years ago, but I don't know. It was just a fun time, just something to do, you know. Good stuff, brother. Is there anything else we should touch on before we call it a podcast?
No, I appreciate you taking the time with me. I hope that I've been able to reach out to a few more people in a whole other province that perhaps have not even had a chance to delve into Danny Deeds just yet. And I'm looking forward to getting everything back on track and seeing a lot of familiar new faces out this way and traveling out that way. Appreciate the time, and I hope that everyone who loves wrestling just keeps on enjoying it.
Likewise, brother. Of course. I mean, it definitely helps me too when we get lots of folks from BC to listen to the podcast. I'm really digging, like, the one thing about the pandemic is that I do get to interview people from sort of anywhere now, because when I first started, I was very strict about wanting to do the podcasts all in person, because, like, I have Asperger's syndrome, right? So communicating without being able to see the other person sometimes can be challenging for me. But, like, this, with no other choice but to go online with it, It's definitely helped me grow as a podcaster. So I'm very appreciative you coming on the show today. And if you know anybody else out there in BC that would like to come on, just get them to shoot me over a message, and we'll get that set up.
Absolutely. I'm sure I can roll up a few names for you.
Awesome possum, brother. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of Monday Night Shaw. We will have another episode for you next week. Nova Scotia and New Brunswick.